Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. Welcome along to Chinwag with yours truly, Sister Bang Bang of the Manchester Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Stand by for lots of malicious gossip, wicked chit-chat,
and nothing but the whole truth.
No way.
It's Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang.
What's more?
Today's show contains words of wisdom, sublime words, and rude words too. So if you're of a nervous disposition, fly away, my pretty. If, however, you're made of sterner stuff, then settle back for another fabulous edition of... Well, hello, kids. Have I got a fabulous show for you? Absolutely. And today I'm chatting with the handsome Lee Baxter, a man I've known for at least 250 years now. Back when we were both working on Manchester's glorious gay scene, him for the biggest gay club at that time, Paradise Factory, and me jobbing for a gay magazine, writing all about his place. Ah, such memories. Nowadays, he's more likely to be seen taking superb photographs, including his muse, the sublime and incredible David Hoyle, no less, who I desperately hope to interview for Chinwag one of these days, fingers crossed. So, I started, as always, by asking him that perennial of questions. Who the hell are you?
I've lived in Manchester now since I was 17, so that's what, 26 years. So I suppose I'm now a Mancunian, although I'm originally from Bolton. I'm a photographer, graphic designer, lover of art, drinker of coffee. I mean, what is it you want to know, really?
Everything. I want to know all the dirty secrets coming from your life, Lee. But you mentioned that you've been living in Manchester for quite a few years now. So what brought you to here?
Well, I don't know if you've ever been to Bolton, but it's Farnworth I'm from in particular. I mean, there's a pub on every corner, and that's really the highlight of it. So,
do you have to wear Wellington's rubber boots a lot while you're up there?
No, because it's not posh. It's very... So there's definitely not barber coats and wellies. No, it's very working class. I mean, lovely people, but coming out as a gay man at the time, there was absolutely nothing there for me. So... I started dating someone, and I think the first place I went to was New York, which was a mix of, I was terrified but absolutely exhilarated. I think I just clawed onto the guy's leg almost most of the evening. He wasn't that tall, actually. It was his arm. But yes, so that was my first foray into Manchester, and I was hooked from there onwards, really.
What sort of things did you do once you came here? Did you find a place to live, or were you commuting here, or you're working here?
Well, for the first 3 years, I lived in Bramall with the guy I was seeing, with him and his mum and dad. They were very liberal, and you know, it was an interesting setup, put it that way. If we had arguments, they would step in and mediate, which was quite unusual. But so I lived with him for 3 years, and then we split up, and me and I think like another 9 friends managed to find this house in Burnage, as we used to call it, yes. So we all lived there, and then the first things I did, really, I worked in lots of retail jobs, particularly, remember the guy Richard Cream? Very tall, very fashionable, first guy who managed to sell all Japanese designers like Yoji Yamamoto, Komori Garson. I mean, lovely people to work for. Then after that, I worked for a company called Geese, who sold everything from miniskirts to crop tops for everybody. Every clubber in town used to go to that place, and working there was a real experience. So I think on the first day, the first bit of advice was given: if a customer's rude to you, tell them to fuck off. Which I thought was the best customer service advice I've ever heard.
And can you imagine people doing that nowadays?
Oh, you'd have no chance, would you? You'd be sacked on the spot. So,
how many times did you tell them?
None, because people were generally quite polite. Oh, okay. So, and I wouldn't have done that, really. So, retail was the big start part to my retail, and going out, of course. That paid for me to go out, buy my clothes, etc. So, then from there, I met up with Peter Dalton, me and my friend Elton, and we ended up doing the publicity for the opening of Paradise Factory.
Of course, which was an enormously big club up here, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think once I think it just came just after Flesh, and then there was a club called The Glory Hole that Paul Cons ran. Because at that point, I think Carol and Peter had already had Manto open. So from Manto...
Let's backtrack a little bit here on this. Yeah, because Canal Street is, what, the epicentre of the gay village nowadays, isn't
yes.
it?
Well, yeah, I suppose at that point, there wasn't really Canal Street as such. There was still the New Union, New York, New York, the Rembrandt and Paddy's Goose, and I'm sure there were others, but... So that was it, really. And I think at that point, Caroline Scope, Peter Dalton came up with an idea to open a bar, all glass, fronted, so everything you could see from inside and out. So nothing was hidden, which was quite a novelty, really, at the time. So it was like, we're here, we're queer, get used to it kind of thing.
Well, in a way, it was quite groundbreaking, wasn't it? It wasn't something that people were used to. They were used to, like, little doors without little tiny windows in, you had to knock three times to get in.
And then even just from the design perspective, it had that kind of glass frontage, two floors, you know, quite minimal. So, you know, very much of the period, really. But everything else was more pub-like at the time, wasn't it? So this was, again, on that level, quite interesting. And then I suppose from there, the rest of the street just kind of slowly opened up from there as well, didn't it?
Certainly Manto was a catalyst.
Yes. But yeah, so then from there, then I met up with Peter Dalton, somehow managed to get the job with my friend Elton doing the publicity for the opening of the club. We'd never done PR in our lives, so we had an idea of what it was about. It was just basically letting everyone know it was there. Getting in touch with magazines like The Face, Sky Magazine.
Boys.
Boys Magazine, of course, yeah. So, gosh, yes, Boys. And we just kind of winged it, really. And then the opening night of that was just something quite spectacular, really. And that's where I first became friends with my very good friend David Hoyle, because we were looking for a club host, someone we thought would be quite interesting. And I'd only seen him out and about, and I had a few ideas about him, and we decided he'd be perfect. So the opening night of that, I remember we hired a white limousine, and he turned up in it. I got the driver to wait outside with the window wound down while he played David Bowie's Low. While he just sat in the back with this ridiculous butterfly costume, which when he opened the wings said represented fisting. So those were kind of early days for me, really, working at Paradise Factory, Manto. And I think I was like there for easily 10 years.
David was and still is such a character, isn't he? He's such an individual.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose he's my most... I think he's a massive influence on me. And once and probably he's always just said to me to never really worry and just do exactly what you want. Yeah. And don't question things. If it doesn't work out, then tough, do try something else. It doesn't, you know... And his influence has been massive, really, on me. And especially the way he is as a person... he's very free, and as you say, he's a massive personality at the same time, and he does things his own way, and I think a bit of that's rubbed off on me. I'm probably a bit more not conservative. I'm definitely not conservative.
No, you're not,
no,
David.
No, and I'd hate to use that word anyway. Full stop. But
go wash your mouth out with soap. No, more liberal, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, I'm a bit more laid back, I would say.
Right.
But then I suppose David is a very private person behind the scenes. When he's performing, performer and David are two very different people, and I think some people mix those up at times.
I think that's fairly common, though.
Of course it is, yeah.
I mean, I have to say, the gorgeous sister that you're seeing here, sat next to you drinking coffee, is partly influenced by David Hoyle.
Yes,
you know, I've kind of not grown up with him like you've grown up with him. But certainly, you know, little bits rub off, and you see, you know, that you can do exactly what you want and say what you want, and then wait to see what happens.
I think also we're living times now where, even in theatres, you almost have to present a script so that they can go through to make sure certain things, which surely art isn't about any kind of mediation.
Yeah.
Whereas, again, for him, I know that he probably works in spaces outside of that where he can say exactly what he wants. And that's the idea of being an artist, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If not, what's the point?
I suppose in one way, being an artist is working on your own, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's being yourself, working on your own, and if other people like it, great. If other people don't,
oh, God, wow.
No, well, I suppose if everybody likes what you do, then you're doing something wrong, I think.
I suppose that's a very deep conversation to sort of get into. Yeah. You suppose you'd be like one of the sheep then?
Yes, I suppose so, yeah.
So he rubbed off on you in many ways.
Yes.
He helped develop you. And yet, you know, to me, I've often seen you as, not necessarily quiet and unassuming, but certainly more calm, and you're a relaxing influence.
Well, see, I'm not...
Is that wrong?
I'm not. Actually, I'm quite highly strung at times, but... See, when I was before I moved to Manchester, I used to go to the Bolton Octagon Youth Theatre, and did drama at school. But then, for some reason, years down the line, the idea of actually being in front of people, I hate completely. So being behind a camera and being behind the scenes suits me just fine.
All right. Well, we do need more people like you. You're listening to Sister Bang Bang's Chinwag with myself and also my lovely guest, Lee Baxter.
Hey kids, you know that every episode of Chinwag is done completely free, doesn't cost a penny or a dime, and it's just one of the many ways that we sisters try and entice you to donate money to good causes. So, if you have a few pennies to spare, please go now to our website at www.themanchestersisters.org and just click on one of the donate buttons. Every tiny bit helps, and we rely on your generosity. So donate now at www.themanchestersisters.org. Thank you from the bottom of our goodly hearts.
With Sister Bang Bang.
It is Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang, and my guest today is Lee Baxter, somebody who I've known for years and such a talented photographer. We're just talking about influences and also what is art in that respect, isn't it?
Oh, what influences me? In terms of what I do photography-wise, I try not to look at other photography because... In as much not to try and take ideas from it, more so, especially since I've moved to Ancoats, I live on the 7th floor, and just the view from my window is inspiring enough. I've taken pictures of kids jumping into the water, swans, geese, you name it, everything that I've seen from that window has been photographed.
Did the kids actually get out of the water?
I think they must have Teflon skin in this area. There's something going on.
Your photographs weren't called on by the police as evidence, then?
No, they were well behaved. But I'm from the perspective I am, none of them ever saw me, so it's all done from that kind of, not from a kind of, I'm trying to think of the perspective I can call it.
Yeah,
really.
It's not a voyeur, is it? It's more of a security camera point of view.
/ documentist. I'm documenting kind of.
Okay, yeah.
So I suppose in a lot of instances, in the 90s when I went out, I'd never had a camera. I was too busy getting off my head, having a great time, dressing up, and, you know, being a 20-something person. Whereas now, I feel like I've not missed out on documenting that, so now I try and document as much as I can around me.
Just leaping back to the heady days of, like, Paradise Factory, you said you were working there. You know, just to reiterate, Paradise Factory was a massive concern, wasn't it? It was packed every time it opened its doors. People came from all over Europe to go to Paradise Factory, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose after Flesh, there wasn't really anything for a while. And that took over at the old Factory Records building. So the building itself had a history and was very iconic. And I think from the minute the doors opened, it was busy constantly for 10 years, which was amazing. And especially in the Northwest, the people, as you say, came from... Liverpool, Sheffield, I think Roisin Murphy came over at some point. Everybody you can imagine has come through the door there. But it was very much, I think it was one of those club nights where you could be on the dance floor with a clone, with a lesbian, with a muscle boy, the drag queen, and it was such a great mix. And I think that's what its kind of secret formula was, really. Because almost from there, we did have a point where you'd go to a leather club more so, or a... a lesbian bar, which, you know, I suppose still did happen then, but this kind of brought everyone together.
And quite a few characters there. You mentioned David, who used to do the act Divine David, yes, didn't he, for the bear. But there was Coco and Angel, who I remember. Yes, yes. Who is still going, but it changed. It's Kate O'Donnell now, isn't yes. it? And Paul.
Well, Paul's very big in poppies, isn't it? Sorry, not poppies.
Pansies.
Pansies, of course, yeah. Who does that wonderful art project, the Pansy Project, which, you know, is amazing. Mm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the Pansy Project, isn't it? He goes around the UK planting a pansy flower in a place where a homophobic attack
yes.
is taking place.
Yeah. Or even if just a verbal attack. So,
oh, right.
Yeah, so verbal or physical. And then photographs it and documents it. But, I mean, this is like an ongoing thing, and I think he's documented in Paris. I might be New York.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's gone overseas. It's really taken off.
And Kate O'Donnell, who used to be Angel.
Yes. Well, Kate's one-woman show is just magnificent. You know, from her big beginnings in Norwich right through to where she is now. I mean, it's an amazing story. Mm.
Such a character who hasn't changed really over the years. It's still always has that facade of being quite big as a woman, it's tall-wise.
Yes, and very chic, very elegant, very beautiful, and very modest at the same time, believe it or not. So, but you know, she's a wonderful person. And again, it's interesting how all these people have developed over the years from that period in the 90s.
Yeah.
And are still going, which is pretty good going in a lot of instances.
It is, yeah. It's almost begs a film be made out of this, you know, and bringing them all together at the end yes. for a reunion.
Well, that would be a lovely idea. I mean, yes, the 90s. Here and now.
Yeah, that'd be great, that. In fact, you're supposed to say those were the days, weren't they, going back. Do you miss those sort of days of paradise?
Only in as much that I could cope with a hangover for better. Because I think it's best not to sometimes look back and think, oh, they were better times than now, but or else you end up not really enjoying the moment you're in, do you, really? So,
slitting your wrist.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose we didn't have mobile phones so at the time. We did, but we didn't take pictures and post them everywhere. So that was one plus point.
Yeah,
you could actually dance and not have to worry about whether you look great on your phone or crap like that. So that was a good.
Or seeing a whole sea of heads bowed down.
Or having someone post a picture the day after when your face was a bit contorted.
Yeah. But, you know, Paradise has the occasional comeback party, doesn't it?
It does, yes. I think it had its last one. When was that now? Last Pride, I think. Was it?
Yeah. I think
yes.
It was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think that's it. Now. I don't think they're going to do any more.
Right.
Never.
Put a line under that.
Yeah.
Marvelous.
I think sometimes there is a point where you say it's nice to bring it back, but then yeah, let's leave it there now.
Right. Because if you work with Paradise Factory, though, what sort of big names did you bump into? You mentioned Rasheen.
See, a lot of these will be lost on people under 30, not under 30, but under 25. There was Delight, the Lady Miss Kier, she was lovely. So my memory's not amazing, really.
That's with the 90s, wasn't it?
Yes, it definitely was. I'll have to come back to you on that one, because I can't remember half the people, honestly. But there was plenty. Mark Almond, yes, he was one. Mm-hmm. Andy Bell, I think, possibly. Oh, take that. They were quite regular in there as well. So, you know, you'd see the four of them on the dance floor with Nigel looking out for them, so...
Yeah. Well, they certainly did the gay scene before they became famous, didn't they?
Yeah. Jellies and mops, I remember, in one of the videos, which was always quite pleasant, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that one. But you're listening... I have memories here. Hey. No, it's taking me back now. You're listening to Tunework, myself, Sister Bang Bang, and my guest here is Lee Baxter.
Hi, friends, it's Sister Indica, your homegirl for life. Not only am I gorgeous, not only am I a sister of perpetual indulgence, but I'm also host of the podcast Joy Bomb, where I rant and rave about pop culture, politics, music, TV, and more. I interview all sorts of interesting people and play underground music you probably don't know, but should. So what's stopping you? Subscribe on iTunes.
Joy Bomb.
If it's good enough for Sister Bang Bang, it's good enough for you.
It is Chinwag with myself, Sister Bang Bang. And my special guest is a man who I have known for years. And I've often admired. I always wanted to be a photographer. And he ended up actually following his love of that. It's Lee Baxter. And I will be giving you details of his website and everything a little later on, so you can have a look at his work as well. Right. But now... now it's time for Bang Bang's Quick Six. Are you ready, Lee?
I'm ready.
Right. Six questions. Very brief. Very to the point. Take as long as you want in answering them. Okay. All right. The only rule is you can't ask for further clarification on them.
Okay.
So it's your interpretation. Right. Here we go. Number one. Very easy. Tea or coffee?
Coffee with soy milk. Mm-hmm. I can't start the day without it. I'm addicted to it. Probably do need help. When I move into the afternoon, an Earl Grey is very much part of the afternoon kind of refreshment.
So it's more tea
So coffee is almost like the line of coke in the morning,
right.
And tea is like the probably more acidy kind of chill out thing in the afternoon.
I love the way you're equating tea and coffee with class A drugs.
I think because we were talking about the 90s before. It's still in my head, perhaps.
That's brilliant. I've never had anybody equate it to that. That's brilliant. I love that. So it depends on the day, time of day.
Yeah, or coffee in the morning, tea in the afternoon.
Right. Number two, getting slightly more deeper here. Is it going to be veg or is it going to be meat?
Veg. I've been vegetarian for 3 years now, so it's definitely vegetables all the way.
Why?
Well, I've watched some of those videos of chickens being minced and the way that cows are treated and stuff. And also it's... this planet can't exist purely on meat alone. The amount of crops that are put to one side just for meat production is becoming ridiculous, so something has to give. Mm. And I'm not really... And actually, I don't care about the taste of it anymore, so vegetables all the way for me.
Is this a one-man war, though, or are you attempting to get people on your side?
Well, no, because I think it's everyone's personal choice, and there's nothing worse than... those people who have, before they've even said their name, they're like, hello, I'm a vegetarian or a vegan, la la. You know, it's, if someone asks you, you can probably tell them. But, you know, it's best not to
force your dogma.
Yes, that's it. That's exactly.
Because that fits perfectly with the sisters, because, you know, we don't subscribe to dogma.
Yeah.
In fact, we want to push people away from all of that shit.
You don't want things forcing down your throat in that particular instance, do you?
I'm glad you clarified that, yes. There's certain instances that we actively will encourage that.
Yes.
have you tried sort of veganism? You said veganism. Have you tried that? Or macrobioticism, whatever that is?
I still don't really know what that is, to be honest. But I have tried vegan stuff, which... great, but it's just hard to get hold of sometimes, or hard to have the full diet.
I
have to plan ahead for that. You can't just wake up and think, oh, I need to get this, because it doesn't work like that.
You have to be careful what you wear as well.
Well, exactly, yes.
I did try the macro diet once. I was going out with somebody who was into that, and I remember this going out to a restaurant, and it was a huge plate full of, I don't know, it looked like grass clippings to me. Different colours of grass clippings.
I mean, I must admit, I went to a vegan restaurant in Berlin, and they had this bowl of food. It was just sensational. You could taste every different flavour in it. And my ex and flatmate, Brett, who was an avid meat eater, he doesn't eat it now.
Right.
Not because of condition, he's just... started to try other things and decide he prefers it too.
Oh, right.
Meat alternatives are not too bad, actually.
They're not.
They can taste better.
Apart from creme caramel. If you're a vegan, that just tastes...
That sounds almost alien, doesn't it?
Bit of Star Trek channel in there. Yeah, that just tastes like shitty cardboard.
Some things don't work. No. Some things you're best just sticking to the vegetable version, aren't you?
Absolutely. So that was question two in Bang Bang's Quick Six. Question three... is it bitch or butch?
Well, is it mask for mask or is it femme for femme? I mean, I think it's we live in those times when masculinity is still seen as the better way to be, but I think that's all bullshit. I think we've all got a bit of femininity inside us, and why should we deny that? Let's just enjoy who we are and not try and be like our daddies. There's a lot. I think sometimes that comes down to being a proving to your father in a lot of ways, perhaps. would my dad think if I'm a bit femme, would my dad think? Or maybe I'm, I don't know. But see, my dad's, funnily enough, Salford kind of very working class and quite, it was very hard, harsh on me, but not in the way I was brought up, just in, I don't mean like in a beaten kind of way, but I just mean like, you know, I didn't get away with anything. But when I came out as gay to him, it was like, oh, right, okay, that's fine.
All right.
So, but I wonder if there is sometimes that if I appear feminine, it makes me appear weaker kind of thing. And I'm on all power to femininity in women, so let's go bitch for me.
Okay.
But not bitch in that way, as in, no, let's go, I'll say femme rather than bitch then, if that's okay. Right.
Absolutely, it's how you interpret this. Yeah. It's absolutely you. I mean, that's an interesting take on that. I've not come across that way of explaining it before. For me, I never really had a father, so
yes,
I had nothing really to aspire to in terms of what you've just said about butch sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't describe myself as camp.
I think when you just let yourself be who you are, it doesn't really matter. And then sometimes, you know, your wrist might go a little bit limp, but so what? There's far worse things happening, aren't there? Let's be honest.
Yeah, we all have these days, don't we, throughout the world. It's National Whatever Day. Let's have a National Limp Wrist Day.
I think let's go for it, yeah.
That was question 3 in Bang Bang's Quick Six. Moving on to question 4 for Lee. Is it going to be money or fame?
Mummy or fame? Well, I'm not... I suppose I was a mummy's boy as a child.
No, money.
Money. Mummy, mummy.
I thought you said more money every minute.
Fame. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Do I want... Oh, no, I'll have fame. Forget the mum. Ditch her.
No, is it hard cash or is it celebrity?
Well, celebrity really is just... In a nutshell, I see it just as... Especially in this day and age, as being famous for doing absolutely nothing, for just people knowing who you are. And I think... If we look back at what celebrities were in, say, 20 years ago, people had a talent. I mean, obviously, people still do have a talent, but if you look at all the best actors, painters, artists, most of them are quite... What's the word? I'm terrible at remembering words. So, quite modest people, and they're not really out to get fame. I mean, money's nice, because it allows you to be able to do things, and we do live in a very... capitalist society, don't we? So without money, that can be a problem. It'd be nice to get a balance where you could still do lots, but on less in a way. A bit like Aldi, really. But yeah, do a lot with a little. But no, celebrity, definitely. I'm not that bothered. I mean, I do. I am aware that I have to kind of push what I do, and sometimes I feel uncomfortable doing that. So I feel like you say it's more about talking about me, when all I really want to show is the work that I do. People like to see the person with it as well.
See, as a sister, I have no problem talking about me.
Yeah. So, yeah. So.
But there again, Lee, you know, I could argue that using a celebrity status can help not just yourself, but a lot of others because of that power you've got.
Yeah. When it's used, I suppose if people are doing something for a charity or whatever, then, yeah, fair enough. But when it's just for the sake of wearing a nice dress, I just think, what's the point? So which choice would I go for?
The nice dress.
I suppose I'd go for the money, but only because it'll help pay for more cameras and more equipment. So yeah, that's always nice.
And I suppose, in a way, we are working towards that, aren't you? You're making a product, that's your business.
See, I'm a terrible business person. I probably could probably make a lot more money, but that's not my motivation. I just almost like creating things, and then that's it for me, really.
I think most creative people are like that, though.
But then, you know, as I get older, I probably won't be able to. I need to think about how I'll live, and I don't own a home or nothing like that. So perhaps I'll be a homeless artist. Who knows?
Maybe you should pair it with somebody who's great at the marketing side, and then you know you can get on with the creators.
Well, if there's anybody out there I'd like to do that, then give me a ring or email me or whatever. Yeah.
Well, why don't you become a sister and you could be the in-house sister photographer? One of them is, I know why, they get lost down in the dungeons, a lot of these sisters, but I'm sure one of them's good at marketing.
Yes, okay. Sounds like a deal.
Okay, that was question 4. Was it money or fame in Bang Bang's Quick Six? Question 5 now. Mum. We are looking at mum now. Mum or dad?
Well, I suppose, not to be unfair to my dad, but when I was the firstborn, so my mum, for 9 months being in there, I was for 6 years just mollycoddled, I suppose. So she used to read to me, taught me how to read, taught me to do everything. And I suppose she was almost a bit like my sister as well as I've grown up. So I'd definitely go for mum. Even though I do love my dad, though.
Yeah.
I just don't... I think a lot of gay people are a bit more distant from the fathers than they are the mothers in a lot of ways, in that cliche. But... So, yeah, I'd say my mum. Closely followed by my dad, though.
What don't you tell your mum? This is a little offshoot.
Well... I don't tell her about what I do sexually. I mean, I'll just let her come up to think about that herself, so... I mean, because I know some people do tell their mothers things like that, but... No.
You dream of it.
Apart from that, I probably tell my mum pretty much everything, really.
Right. You share with her, then?
Yeah. Hmm. No, because she's not judgmental. She'll just be like, bloody hell, did you really do that? So, yes.
And then she'll say, don't do it again, then. Yeah.
Knowing full well, I probably will, so, yeah.
Fine, OK. And the last question now, Bang Bang's Quick Six. We've reached the end. Will it be glitter or tweed?
Well, see, I like tweed, but I think maybe tweed... with a hint of glitter running through it, like a nice glitter thread.
You want everything, you do.
Oh, God, yes. So, yeah, I think almost the mundane can always be made very beautiful, can't it? So I'd say a mixture of both.
Lovely. Well, that was the Bang Bang's Quick Six. It wasn't that bad, was it?
It was fine, actually,
It was fine, yeah. You are listening to Chinwag, myself, Sister Bang Bang, with my guest, Lee Baxter.
Instagram. Yes, your sister is on Instagram, and it's the only way to see all my wonderful, gorgeous photos. And some of them are even suitable for your mother to see, but not many. So, prod your finger over to Instagram and find me, Sister Bang Bang Ladesh. You know you want to. Malicious gossip, wicked chit-chat, and nothing but the whole truth. It's Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. Goodbye.
It is Chinwag, Sister Bang Bang here from the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, and my special guest on this show is Lee Baxter. If a photographer now, but you've kind of done quite a lot of things within the gay scene, haven't you?
Well...
I'm not saying this is a gay scene thing.
But I mean, I suppose the main thing is what I've always done has been like graphic design. So that's always been my bread and butter money, really. So I taught myself to do that when I worked at Paradise Factory because we needed to do flyers. So the guy who was doing them at the time left. I mean, the first ones I did, when I look at them now, I mean, they're probably in fashion now because of that cut and paste. So, yeah, so that was, I was kind of self-taught to do. But then I always wanted to do a degree. So when I came to like... nearly 30, I thought, well, I should do one. And also, it was the last time you could get a grant, so I thought, I may as well make the most of it. So I thought, what could I do? What do I really enjoy? And I thought, well, I always like the visual side of putting images with the text, if I'm using the most basic idea. So I thought, why not make the images myself? So I did the degree in photography and then never looked back from that, really.
You see, it always foxes me that you do a degree in photography and all you need to do is pick a camera up and press the button.
Well, to be honest, I just wanted to do a degree. You don't... what would have been better for me is to just assist someone who already was a photographer. I would have probably learnt the same in 3 months than what I did in 3 years. But you almost want that experience of being a student, don't you? It's great. It's great to be a student and have a good time, so...
I get way blue moon.
Yeah, but at the time... because I had been going out, I wasn't necessarily missing lectures and stuff because I was wasted. I actually was going in and enjoying it and making the most of it. So, and there was a lovely dark room there. So there was almost 2 dark rooms in my life. Not that I used to go to the dark room.
I would say now, dear listener, you know, we're talking about the dark room for photography now, yes. Not for nefarious pursuits, shall we say.
But that was great, getting hands-on and actually watching a photograph develop. Of course, now... I work digitally now just because of the time, and people want things. You photographed something an hour ago, they want it within the hour kind of thing. So digital is good for that, but there still is that beautiful quality in a film photograph.
I think a lot of the software nowadays, though, is it tries to emulate that old feel and style.
It does, but it still looks like it's been photoshopped to look like that.
Mm.
It's when you look up close, you know. It's the detail, it's the grain of like an image, really.
I know you're going to take some photographs of us sisters, and we do benefit from a lot of photoshopping, just to let you know that.
Well, you know, I'm sure it's just minimal you'll need. Just a few, maybe, blemishes here and there.
A thick coating of Vaseline on the lens, or a sheet of liner in front of it.
Or even a pair of tights.
So let me leap back again, because I am fascinated the fact that we've got this link with the gay village. The gay village in Manchester came about, well, probably in the 60s, when it was more lesbian orientated, and it was seen as an area of vagabonds and ne'er-do-wells, really. And that changed in the 90s when Manta came along. It was much more for open, free-spirited. But it was still very much a cliquey area, wasn't it? It was very much a gay area.
Well, I think it was still that kind of ghetto feeling, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because people did stick together because there was still discrimination, which there still is now, but more so then. So, you know, there was a more of a... I'm not saying it's not as sociable now, it's more of a social aspect, but people did stick together and help each other. So I think it almost needed to be like that at the time, and I think it helped being like that. The people who kind of came into it, who may have come from a small town who hated anyone who was gay, so they came into almost like a family, so people were always welcome into that. And I think, you know, from there, things have changed, and everyone probably uses the same one, and I'm going to say the same thing, that after Queer as Folk, there's like before
this,
and after.
This is the UK version.
Yes, there's a before Queer as Folk and after, isn't there? I mean, great programme at the time. I people I know who were watching it as teenagers, they loved it, and it helped them come out, and it made a lot of sense to them. And I think after that, it just kind of opened the doors a bit more and people became more accepting. And, you know, probably that area's more diluted with different people, which isn't a bad thing. So, and I think a lot of younger gay men now coming out don't necessarily just go to a gay venue. I think they just go to a venue and happen to be gay. So I'm glad, of course, gay venues still exist, because I still love going to them. So I think things have just opened out a little bit more. A lot more, really. So
what about sort of more the political angle, though? Because that seems to have, I don't know, not necessarily changed as much. It's still people are out for their own in many respects.
Yeah, well, I think almost the groundwork was done in the 80s, 90s, 70s, 80s, 90s by everybody going on marches and going with the miners against the government. And that doesn't really happen as much now, but I think that's more times to do with how we're so brainwashed by the media. We're not encouraged to think politically, so I don't blame people for not necessarily being that way. I think sometimes, unless they're surrounded by people who are, it's very easy to be sucked into that kind of daytime TV, X Factory kind of way of thinking.
In some ways, you know, you see homophobic abuse on like YouTube clips that pop up, and you think, are you just doing this to be fashionable? Yeah. Do you think this is just impressing your friends? Yeah. You don't really know what you're saying.
No, well, it's... I mean, obviously that still happens, because I'm still aware of it. People still get beaten up. And I don't think that's... With it, it's going to go away. But I don't think we should forget that it still happens, or else we end up living in some sense of utopia and think everything's great and everything's lovely. But it's not always... It's not the case, I don't think.
Referring to Manchester, which is where we are, it's a great city, very bohemian, very open-minded and everything. But are we trapped in a bubble here, like you were sort of referring to there? Everything's wonderful, everything's fabulous, but just in central Manchester.
Yeah, but I mean, the sense of, you just have to go 5 minutes out of, and you're surrounded by council houses and probably lots of poverty. So, you know, we can't forget that. But my only worry for the city is that we're creating all these wonderful buildings and these great apartments, but who are they aimed at? They're aimed at people with an income above 30k. And I just wish we had a bit more of a balance where people who had less money still were allowed to have nice things. You know, it's easy to demonise the poor, but I think we just need to find more of a balance.
Do you think that'll happen, though? The fact that people are comfy, what they're doing? People live in the gay village nowadays, don't they? And they're comfy.
But I suppose, I'm not just talking about gays, am I really? I'm talking about people in general. But I suppose Yeah, well, again, that's another symptom of Tory rule, I would say. That people are very much... Well, as long as I'm all right, it doesn't matter about anybody else. And I've had overheard discussions in party discussions of hearing people say how disgusting beggars are and they should just be cleaned up. And, like, well, perhaps you need to step back a little bit and look at the symptoms of why they're in that position. It's... I think we all have responsibility to... What's that great phrase that, you know, the measure of something is based upon the way it treats its poorest people? There's there is a better way of saying, I can't think of what it is, but I think that's very true. If we're mean to the lower end of the spectrum, then what does it say about us?
Mm. Certainly it's only mean, you know, putting more of a magnifying glass on, you know, an area that, yeah, you know, we tend to get more into, which is the gay scene, the LGBTI, yeah, yeah, and what have you. It's internalised homophobia even happens, isn't it? There's gays against gays.
Well, yeah, because we touched upon mask for mask earlier. I mean, you only have to go on Grindr and stuff and you go masculine looking for masculine and you think, have you seen what you're wearing, love? There ain't nothing masculine about that, for a start.
But then again, what's masculine?
Exactly. I don't know, it's...
You find what I'm wearing today masculine, you know, the long veil and everything.
It's more like the tweed / glitter look from earlier, I would say, yeah, so...
I got that right then, yes. Just for you.
Fantastic, for yeah. You. Oh, God, there is that, because it's the whole idea that when I hear the phrase that, oh, camp people really ruin it for everyone else. Mm. You know, if it wasn't for camp people throwing bricks at Stonewall, none of these mask-for-mask queens could be doing what they do now, so let's not forget that.
Yet again, you get a whole load of people saying, yeah, but that's before my eye, yeah, it doesn't bother.
Well, without that, then you wouldn't be able to say that. So I think people should think back a little bit further sometimes.
Mm. That's thinking about others rather than yourself,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Where do you see the gay village, Manchester's gay village, in like another 10, 20 years' time? Will it really exist? Does it need to exist?
Well, that's a good question. I think there'll always need to be a space for people who... People are always going to be coming out, aren't they, to a degree? And they're not always from families where people are accepting, and I don't think that's going to change. In 10 years, maybe 20, 30 years, maybe when this generation are having children, things might change then. But there'll always be a need for something. What it'll be, I don't know.
So we're getting closer to a question I should just ask you outright. What do you hate about life?
What do I hate?
I don't ask me, hate's too strong a word.
I dislike the disproportionate between wealth and poverty, and there's not really much of a middle ground. And the middle ground, everyone's suspects each other for getting what they want. It's just all... Maybe I want things just to be a bit more levelled out, a bit more of a level playing field for everybody. Okay. And people to get an opportunity, and people to be able to go to university, that's probably basically it, really.
Maybe you could do it yourself. Photo yeah. Project around what level playing field. There's your yeah. There's your project title.
Lots of grass. Really. But yeah, no. But again, obviously, I mean, there's an interesting thing I've read recently about the gay media, how everything's whitewashed, and that's an interesting aspect. Like I think it was just something I was reading yesterday. The covers of all these magazines that people were putting, every single one of them was white, and that's an interesting aspect, especially of the gay scene. Yeah. Is everybody kind of, what's the word, represented? And I still don't think they are. It'd be nice to have more representation for people, I think.
Do you think that aspect needs to be represented, though, with the fact that if it's a man or a woman or trans or whatever?
It's a tricky one, really. I know, yeah. I suppose how you do it is another way, but I don't know. Mm. But yeah, I'd like to see. I remember David saying to me once, he said, he'd be happy for today. He sees Mr. Gay UK won by a guy in a wheelchair. These are lots of questions that are...
We should have a round table discussion if we get a load of people involved in this sort of thing.
I think I've gone on different tangents then, but I didn't really mean to, but yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
That's what chinwag's all about, isn't it? Having a chinwank, putting the world to rights.
Chinwank.
Well, that could be the late night version, so chinwank with Sister Bang Bang and a load of disgusting people.
Yeah. I think fairness, that's all I'm... That's my main thing.
That's a good way.
Yeah, that's just fairness, really.
Right. We've mentioned quite a few times that fact that you are a photographer, that you are a professional photographer now.
Well, in as much that I don't have to look at a book to tell myself how to take the picture. I still wing it now and again. But I think most people in anything they do, they do wing it. If you ask them honestly.
But isn't that hard then?
No, but yeah, you can't really wing it when you need you, I suppose, putting the fixtures and fittings to a building, because if you do that, it doesn't always work, does it? But
no, you're right there. Yeah.
But then I suppose, you know, yeah, no.
Well, there's a lot of difference between you doing a setup, isn't it, for a photograph, yeah. and you were talking about David Hall before. And you was it the other night you took some photographs of him, and in a way that was winging it. You were responding to the situation.
Well, yeah, well, you know, there was one of those lovely kind of celebrity style dressing room mirrors with the lights all the way around it, and he was wearing these lovely Deirdre Rashid style glasses. Great reflection, snap away, caught in his glasses. Lovely image. Mm.
For those who don't know, Deirdre Rashid is more like your Manchester equivalent of Iris Apfel in a way, isn't it?
Very much, yes, I would say so, yes.
Certainly when it comes to glasses,
yes.
Which I channel. Studio-wise, gallery-wise, where can we see your photos?
At the moment, I've got a few ideas for exhibitions, because I did one last year. And people have been asking what I'm going to do next. And sometimes you just need a bit of time to kind of throw ideas through your head. You can't just force things. But because a lot of the stuff I did on Ancoats last year, I really enjoyed doing, because it was like capturing the area I lived in. So perhaps I'll move somewhere else and capture a new area.
Because one of the things when we must comment on is the fact that you are involved with the George House Trust like I
yes.
am. And you seem to be like an official photographer. The George House Trust is the charity that looks after people living with HIV in the northwest of the UK.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, I'm almost, yeah, I think that's what I'm on board as, the person who helps them with their visuals, which is great for me, because, you know, I can do something, actually give something back. And at the moment, I'm working on them for a video that actually looks back over their 30 years. So lots of interviews with people who were there from the start, with up to people who are part of it now. And that's going to be out in a couple of months.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Feature length in the cinema?
30 minutes, I'd say. So, yeah. Some documentary length, I'd say, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you get involved in GHD? Was it just something that was close to your heart? You felt that you wanted
know.
To?
I don't know. I think someone just emailed me. I'm not sure. Maybe they saw a photograph I'd taken of something, and then it just kind of blossomed from there.
Finally. Well, not finally. Almost finally. Websites. Let's have your website so we can have a look at your photos.
It's baxterphoto.co.uk, or on Instagram, it's either Photo Baxter or Baxter Photo. One of the two. You'll find it anyway.
You were right when you said you weren't that good at marketing, Ian.
No. Yeah, you are. Yeah, I should be able to spiel it all up. I should know.
So the website is baxterphoto.co.uk. Lovely. And now, finally, Lee. Well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us on.
Thank you for asking me questions.
What do you want to see on your gravestone?
Lived a full life.
Do you think you have?
Well, I probably always think I won't have, but I think, you know, you strive to, don't you? Do as much as you can and enjoy it along the way.
And so too, the epilogue. You know, many people do see us, Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, as just a slightly flamboyant person who puts on a nun's habit to become outrageously flamboyant. And that's all. When we share with them the fact that we raise money for charity, we preach love and the casting out of guilt, and try to educate others into giving up on racism, homo, trans and biphobia and the like, the look of surprise is, in some ways, a joy. We have perceptions of others that might not be correct. It's one thing that I inadvertently succumb to without thinking on the rare occasion. I end up feeling guilty. And we don't do guilt in the Sisters. So how do you break through the barrier? How do you stop judging people wrongly? It was a question I shared with a friend, and she came up with a clue, a rather simple one too. Ask. Just ask, she said. If you rolled up to me and said, you look like someone who loves their habit, but is there something else I should know? And I'd be a happy sister. If you see someone who is doing something you don't understand, or maybe even confusing you even, then why not ask? if you don't understand why someone is gay or lesbian or bi or trans or whatever, then why not ask? You might end up with a good friend, you know. Till next time.